Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good morning and welcome to this, the latest Burr News Facebook Live interview. I'm joined today by Lila Medeiros. Lila is the Deputy Director of ABIR, the Association of Bermuda Insurers and Reinsurers. A bit of a change to have a business conversation today, and very many thanks for coming along and sparing your time. First of all, for those who might not know, tell us a little bit about what ABIR is, what does it do, what does it aim to do, and who does it represent, of course?
Okay. First of all, thanks, Jeremy, for having me. Thank you, Burr News. Appreciate an opportunity to have a conversation about what we do. ABIR, for those of you who don't know who we are, the acronym stands for the Association of Bermuda Insurers and Reinsurers. We've been around since 1994, and we represent predominantly the reinsurance property cat writers here, who also write other lines of business as well. So the RenRes, the XL Catlins, the Partner Rees. And our main focus is to represent the public policy, international regulatory affairs, and local affairs, and anything actually that impacts or affects our ability to do business.
So you're a bit of a lobby group?
We are. Yeah.
Lobbying, obviously, on behalf of the industry, for the interests of the industry.
Right. Because it's, our companies, while they're headquartered in Bermuda, operate around the globe. They're generating income from about 150 countries. So it's not sort of we're an isolated oceanic island just operating in Bermuda. We're operating across the globe. So there's a lot of things, moving parts, and our job is to monitor those and keep an eye on them and make sure they don't negatively impact our ability to do business.
One of the big issues that's happened recently, of course, we're all very aware of, because we're all affected by hurricanes here. We've had Irma, we've had Maria, we've had the earthquakes in Mexico. We've seen several companies declaring estimated losses, Lancashire Holdings up to $212 million, AIG up to $3.1 billion, Validus up to $378.9 million. What does it actually mean? What does it mean to the companies themselves, first of all, these kind of losses?
I think firstly and foremost, the devastation has been widespread, severe in some cases, and I think in the first instance we sort of extend sort of our thoughts with those countries.
Absolutely.
The communities that they impact, the loss of life, loss of business, but I think our companies are here to assist and contribute to the economic recovery. That's what we're in the business. So the promise to pay in exchange for a premium is that we'll be there to pay if you suffer losses. So I think despite the sort of horrificness of it and just the broadness of it, I mean, I think this will go down as it's already being touted as the HIM scenario. So the Harvey, Irma, and Maria. And notwithstanding that, we also have a couple of earthquakes. And then what's evolving today, Jeremy, is the wildfires in California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think as of last night, there were something like 1,500 homes.
And 10 dead, unfortunately.
10 dead, the wineries that are being destroyed, commercial business that's being destroyed. So I think what's important here is the role that Bermuda plays in the economic recovery. I think we're estimating, of course, it's still early days. Some of these are just best estimates. We're estimating that it's probably going to be perhaps somewhere around $100 billion in total losses, and the Bermuda market will probably contribute to about a quarter of those.
$25 billion.
Right. So what we'd expect is, as you mentioned, some companies will expect for the rest of the month of October, the publicly traded companies will be making these announcements as to what they estimate will be their losses. And again, it's estimates because it's evolving. As you well know, in the process, people make claims, and because some of these are reinsurance protection, they have to wait till the primary carriers, the Allstates,
right.
The State
mm-hmm.
Farms, mm-hmm. and those companies will then collect. But we, you know, I can safely say that our companies are already writing checks and are there to meet their commitments.
Is this having a particularly huge impact in terms of the company's business model, revenue stream, income? I'm not a reinsurance expert.
It will definitely be an earnings event. It will impact third quarter earnings. I think we've seen some already posted in the Royal Gazette and other places, Business Insurance, Insurance Insider. They're all sort of beginning to publish those estimates. Yes, it will definitely be an earnings impact. Whether it affects capital is still the story yet to be told. However, for the Bermuda market, these are heavily capitalized companies. This is the business they write. We're specialty property cat writers. These losses will have been modeled, priced accordingly. So again, it just sort of shows the strength of the Bermuda market and the contribution to that economic recovery.
Will there be any knock-on effect of Bermuda itself? And we'll talk later on about what the reinsurance companies contribute to Bermuda. But will there be any effect from this for Bermuda itself? In terms of what you guys,
yes,
your members can contribute?
I think in the short term, there will be a lot of discussion around what happens Jan 1. So that's traditionally when people renew their coverages. So, you know, in Bermuda, we renew our auto in cycles based on our birthday. So it's sort of a revolving timeline. But in our industry, the two sort of renewal periods are Jan 1 or July 1. So I think we're now into October. I think the market will be evaluating wherever there's a challenge, there's an opportunity. So perhaps when I saw an article this morning, there's some estimations about what might happen to pricing. So it may actually be the event that turns the pricing down cycle up a little bit. So
I want to come on to that. Yeah,
yeah, the pricing
the
might.
The market,
so
we'll
I think
that
that's
yeah.
one thing. I think there may be further pressure about expenses because you will have taken a major hit to your profit. But we've been in an expense reducing mode now for some time.
Again, that's an issue I want to touch on later on as well.
Right.
So there could be quite
right.
a considerable knock on in Bermuda and for the personnel and the personnel here as well.
I don't think in the short term, but I think also whenever you have what I call pivotal sort of events, there's always an opportunity in that challenge. So will we see like a class of 2017? I don't think so, like we did with the other hurricanes,
right,
because
yeah.
there are other sort of financial transactions, the alternative risk market, which may be able to respond. So there may be opportunities that arise out of these events. So there may be additional capital that finds its way to Bermuda. So I think it's still a bit early to tell. But you can bet that there are those who are exploring what the options are.
Well, it would be interesting to see what does happen in
right.
the future. Recently, I think ABA came out and said that your members have contributed somewhere in the region of $900 million
right.
directly to the Bermudian economy last year. Has that been fairly static? Has it gone up and down?
Well, that actually is an increase of 6% over 2015 by about $52 million.
Right.
So we did see this bump up
in
2016. I'm not sure if there is sort of any specific stuff. We saw an increase in spending in legal and accounting services that may have been sort of precipitated by mergers and acquisitions, which requires a lot of service provider
yeah.
Uptake. But I think we have seen this sort of, you know, turnaround in the economy and sort of an uptick. I mean, 6% is a number that we could feel very good about as far as an increase. It had been pretty flat for a while.
I was going to say, yeah, so this is, as a graph goes, then, has it been fairly flatline for a long time?
It's been pretty flatline for a few years. But like I said, this is sort of an uptake to 900. I think in our heyday, if I'm not mistaken.
It'd be good to put into context, yeah.
Yeah, I think back in 2007, 2008 was where we were sort of recording about $1 billion. So we just saw us sort of climb back.
Do you think it will get back to $1 billion? Or is just you haven't got your crystal ball, I suppose?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors, Jeremy, that exist today. You know, Bermuda was founded, and this actually is the 25-year anniversary of Hurricane Andrew. So what we saw post-Hurricane Andrew was this huge influx of capital and sort of the birth of the property cat reinsurance market in Bermuda. We moved away from not just being a captive jurisdiction, but by being a bona fide commercial reinsurance market. And then we sort of enjoyed those sort of upticks in capital and growth following major events, whether it was 9/11, Katrina, Rita, Wilma in 2005, and we used to refer to them as the classes. What we see now is there's still huge sort of investment in capital, but it comes in a different form, which is the alternative risk market, which are by hedge funds, sidecars, cat bonds. And what that means, though, is it's a leaner, meaner instrument. Mm. So it doesn't have perhaps the infrastructure demands and expenses that a traditional reinsurance company. So it may be a smaller shop. It may still represent $1 billion in capital, but it's not going to have the 100 employees or the 200 employees or the big office building. So I think it's a sign of that our market has shifted a bit to more of this sort of efficient, what has been described as efficient use of capital.
We're talking about the market. Where does the market stand at the moment? I mean, as I understand it, it's what's called a soft market,
yeah.
And prices are down,
yeah.
That you can charge. What is the state of the market now? Describe it to me.
Yeah, well, I think it is still in that soft market. Has it stood going into this year? I'm just starting to read sort of the professional journals about what could happen as a result of these events, and I think yesterday it was sort of estimated it could be 10 to 20% increase in pricing, but whether that materializes or not, Jeremy, I think will depend on whether we have new entrants to the market, whether we get a whole bunch more capital, or whether capital will be tied up in reserves to pay for the hurricanes and the earthquake. So it all depends on what happens, I think, in the next couple of months.
Is it the soft market that's precipitated this trend for more mergers and acquisitions, M&A?
Yeah, it's kind of like the concept that if the pricing keeps falling, then it still costs you the same to produce that, but you have to reduce the cost, the expenses. So it's kind of like I was trying to explain it to a student the other day, and I said, it's kind of like a can of Coke. We could sell that Coca-Cola for $1, but now we can only sell it for, say, 75 cents. But it still costs us the same to produce it. So we have to get, the only option is to reduce the expense. And I think we've seen over the last several years this big, I think for two reasons, not just expense reduction, but I think we've seen mergers and acquisitions as a way also to organically grow your business. So a lot easier if you purchase a book of business by acquiring a company than trying to grow that. So, but the expense, the pressure to reduce expenses has been there. I think that's going to remain for a while. I think our industry has been criticized internationally across the globe that our expense ratios are too high. So I've heard that it's more than 50 cents on every dollar of premium, the expense. And so there's sort of an outcry for us to do our business better and be more efficient.
Promise, I guess in your industry, like a lot of industries, your expenses are primarily people.
Yes, yes.
So when Kevin O'Donnell, your chairman, thank you. Actually, I beg your pardon, it was Bradley Kading, the president, was quoted as saying, ABM members continue to be focused on reducing expenses and exploring new product opportunities, even potentially with a hardening of the market, you're still going to be looking at expenses, you'll still be looking at people.
Yeah.
What kind of thing might happen, might we see?
Again, I think companies have undergone a belt tightening now for the last several years. I think that a lot of sort of pruning has already been done. I think we're just going to see conservativism around perhaps salaries, and also there's a view that because we're located around the globe, you know, in order to sort of perform your fiduciary duty to your shareholders, you have to look at where is the most efficient place to have that particular individual placed. So I think the sort of pressure to reduce expenses puts the additional pressure on Bermuda to consider, you know, just how expensive are we to be here. And is it more cost efficient to have person A here, London, Zurich, elsewhere? And so I think that's why it's always this sort of monitoring that we're doing about just how expensive certain jurisdictions can be.
It's something I want to touch on in a minute, but I just want to go back and talk about this M&A a little bit more. You're saying the prices may go 10 or 20%.
Do you think? May.
I said may. Yeah. I stress may. Is it potential then, if that happens, that the M&A trend will slow down?
Potentially.
Or is it just no new markets out there for people? Is the market saturated for products?
Yeah, I think it's really directly correlated with the availability of capital, more so. If the market is flooded with capital, then it just drives the pricing down. However, if we have this huge payouts that will occur, not just from the Bermuda market, but the London market and elsewhere, I think what you might see is the sort of basic economic demand and supply. So if the demand is more than what the available capital exists, then you may have new players, or it may help to drive that price up. I think on mergers and acquisitions, there will always be discussions, there will always be considerations, simply because it's not just a factor of price, it's a factor of growing business, but also looking for efficiencies, whether it's staff, whether it's location. I think mergers and acquisitions are always going to be on the table. Whether they're going to be a flurry like we had, I can't say. Mm-hmm. But I just think they're always going to be in people's minds. If there's a business opportunity, I think it'll take place.
Because mergers, I mean, speaking as a layman, and I stress I really am a layman in these areas, the M&A always seems to me to be bad news for Bermuda, in the sense that it's duplication of services. You're going to get rid of somebody or something, or, you know, charities. Instead of getting donations from two companies, suddenly you get a donation from one company.
Right.
It's not great for Bermuda if this happens, is it?
No, I think, you know, it has sort of unintended consequences sometimes, but I think our numbers show that even despite the big mergers and acquisitions that took place, we still showed an uptick in employment of an increase of 57 people. Mm. What we would have expected, Jeremy, is with the mergers and acquisitions, we would have been at a negative. So I think there is always, because we are a service industry and we're dealing with a financial product, it's all about people. I think we will always have to be staffed with underwriters, support teams. We're a customer relationship business. We're there for our clients. So I think Bermuda has been fortunate in that, despite the mergers and acquisitions, we're still showing an increase in employment.
You talked all about expenses, and of course one of the key expenses, cost of doing business, and that's tax. Some time ago, your chairman, as you mentioned, Mr. O'Donnell, Kevin O'Donnell, said ABA fully supports introduction of payroll tax progressivity, an applaudable effort to build some equity for taxpayers in the current system, and right away. And then later on, early this last month, actually, he said that he warned about further changes to payroll tax and how they could possibly deter companies from basing, in particular, senior executives on here and dampening local employment. What is ABA's position on tax?
Okay, I think on the payroll tax, I think we were very supportive of introducing progressivity. I think it's been something that perhaps was long overdue, you know, to have a flat rate across the board. I think our concern rests with, we've just gone through this major remodeling of payroll tax, mm-hmm. and we will, ABIR members are probably going to sort of be impacted the most, because we are predominantly the sort of in the higher earner brackets, and I think in the modeling that we've done, we're paying about 20 to 25% of the total payroll tax, the 23 companies.
That so is total collected. Payroll tax of Bermuda.
Of Bermuda, so it's
you're paying almost a quarter.
Almost a quarter. So I think to Mr. O'Donnell's comments is, you know, we understood why progressivity was being done. It's a fair system. It's fairer, and let's just face it, it's not something to get right. It's not a perfect system. We know what the UK has gone through in their introduction of their sort of reformulation of progressivity and the impacts that's had in the London market. We know that President Trump is looking at tax reform and altering rates as well. But I think with any sort of revolutionary changes to payroll tax system, there has to be sort of like a glide path, or something that is done over a longer period of time. And I think Mr. O'Donnell's comments speak to the fact that so we incurred additional tax expense with the changes, but too much more may be a tipping point. We don't know what that tipping point is, but I think any expense, say for example, if you're looking at a certain percentage and it's just too much to absorb in any one particular year, then it may cause people to sort of think, okay, do we still keep the employee here or do we have that job position elsewhere?
That's a tipping point.
That would be a tipping point.
So if the
I don't know what it is yet.
No, clearly, but if it reaches X percent.
Right.
Because, of course, we have got the new government has promised a tax reform commission.
Yes, they've tabled a bill in the House, which was tabled, I believe, week before last. It's available on their public website, and it seeks to embody a commission that's similar to the SAGE Commission, which will look at payroll tax reform. And we think that's a good idea. I mean, I think we have to sort of look at what are options out there. How do you broaden the tax base? Are there other forms of taxes? Right now, payroll tax is one of the main sort of revenue generators for government.
It's the majority of revenue.
It's the majority of revenue. So I think it's a good thing if you have a commission that will examine and look at sort of what are options that are out there.
Will you guys seek a place, not on the commission, but certainly a place to talk to the commission?
I think I think having read the act, it allows for interactive consultation with stakeholders, associations, unions, or whatever. So I'm sure we'll be part of that process. We don't know who the commission members are.
No, okay, it's a long way off, yeah.
Yeah, so, but we think it's a good thing that you have to examine sort of what your options, and sometimes through the form of a commission, you can throw everything out on the table.
As well as tax, Mr. Kading also mentioned issues that affect ABM members, things like financial stability, education, employment, and immigration. Can you expand on those kind of things? You know, what you see is those issues, how they impact you.
Yeah.
You've got a suggestion, you know, what kind of you think should be done?
Sure. I think on the financial stability issue, it's no secret that Bermuda has been wrestling to get its debt under control. And I think we monitor closely Bermuda's sovereign rating. So for those of you who don't know, S&P and Fitch, the rating agencies, will place a sovereign rating on Bermuda's financial stability. And I think the concern would be that if something happened to that sovereign rating such that it would go to a junk bond status or triple B or something, whatever, then the concern would be is, has a fiduciary duty to your shareholders, do you stay in a jurisdiction that has that kind of sovereign rating?
It's interesting. You said that when I interviewed the former finance minister, Bob Richards, he would say that that rating would affect your ratings, your members' ratings. Is that right?
Well, it doesn't impact the actual company rating per se, but it does tie into the factors that affect that company's rating. So, for example, when a company is doing its presentations to the rating agencies would pose a question about what are the threats by being in Bermuda. So they're going to have to answer that, defend that. And I think the financial stability is key, not just to the ratings, but also to the reputation of Bermuda as a credible jurisdiction. So the debt issue is something that our members would be very concerned about. So can we manage that debt? Can we have a plan to how we're going to reduce that debt? And I think not unlike their sort of operations where they're looking at ways in which they can become more efficient, it's probably sort of, government looking at efficiencies. And note that the new government has a minister that's responsible for government reform. So it seems like there at least is some thinking around perhaps how to manage that. So that's the financial stability.
You mentioned education, employment, immigration.
Yeah, education, I think, is critical for every society. We're sort of measured by the level and quality of education. And I think, over the years, it's sort of gone back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I think anything that improves the quality of public education is a great thing for Bermuda. I think on the immigration, we're just looking at our ability to facilitate personnel on island, having sort of an environment where business can grow and those opportunities. So I think it all speaks to Bermuda being open for business, having a credible reputation, and just facilitating not only the creation but the ongoing business.
You mentioned Trump, the Trump effect, and the possibility of these 20% corporate tax. Obviously, we've seen from experience over the last few months, we don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
But is this something you guys are monitoring very closely?
Yeah, monitoring very closely. We have been monitoring sort of the U.S. tax front since I've been at ABIR, which is 12 years, and my boss, Brad Kading, who operates out of Washington, he has a finger on the pulse hourly, or sometimes minute by minute. I think, Trump recently announced sort of the themes of what he's looking at. I think the devil will be in the detail. I think we were speaking earlier about the chaos in Washington. The Trump administration has had difficulty in passing a couple of, attempts to repeal Obamacare. We don't know sort of how the tax will roll out, but we are vigilantly watching it, monitoring, and as the kids say, we're all over it. Hmm. So, because it could pose a threat to Bermuda,
yeah,
depending on how it pans out.
Because you mentioned the cost of doing business, the concern of a payroll tax, and suddenly another golden goose comes along, perhaps, and
right,
your costs go down, corporate tax goes down.
Must right. be,
if this kind of combination comes together, it's going to be very tempting for your members, isn't it, to up sticks?
I think it will be tempting. I just think it's too early because we don't know what it's going to look like, how it's going to look, and whether that's even a possibility to reduce corporate.
But it's good to have it on the radar. I know it's
We're like I said, we're all over it. We're also looking at affiliated reinsurance tax, which could be a possibility. That's been a threat for over 20 years. It just pops its head up from time to time. So we're monitoring that. I think we've done a lot of work, Jeremy, with the constituencies in the U.S. who really value Bermuda and the contribution that we make to economic recovery following hurricanes and storms. And, the timing of the storms that, presented themselves, it's sort of a natural sort of segue to sort of demonstrate the importance of just not Bermuda, but the international reinsurance market, the London, the Zurichs, the Irish. 90% of the reinsurance for the U.S. market is outside of the U.S., mm. And that economic contribution has not gone unnoted.
We talked about Trump. Got to look at the other side of the Atlantic, and we got the ongoing scenario with Brexit. Have you kind of looked at the potential implications of Brexit for your industry and Bermuda?
Yeah, I think one of the sort of things that will affect the UK following Brexit is, once they leave the European Union, they're not deemed as equivalent with the EU. They'll have to seek equivalence. And I think the Bermuda government and the Bermuda Monetary Authority, the foresight that they had to seek equivalence under Bermuda's own right, puts us actually in a very good place because we will be and are deemed equivalent
right.
under Solvency II.
So in layman's terms, that means companies don't have to move to the European Union?
No, because we're already treated like as if we're European companies. So I think, applaud both, like I said, the Bermuda government and the BMA for having had that foresight and being successful in achieving Solvency II equivalence. I think, Lloyd's have made their decision. They're going to operate out of Belgium. That's where they're setting up their European headquarters.
Okay.
But I think what we have to watch is sort of how the UK regulators then look at Bermuda, because right now they're sort of bound under Solvency II to recognize or defer to Bermuda because we're equivalent. And I think in a perfect world, we think that the UK would naturally sort of look to Bermuda as being Solvency II equivalent and recognize them as well. The UK will have their own issues in trying to get equivalence for themselves. We understand that one of the strategies may be where they adopt the EU law, like carte blanche, into
right.
the UK. So we'll see how that pans out. But
there's an awful lot of things going on there at the moment this year.
Yeah, and there it's the UK is in the position where they're not allowed to negotiate treaties or any sort of binding until post-Brexit. So I think you know, there's a lot of strategizing about what could happen or sort of the way in which they take the UK forward. But I think, Jeremy, it's just going to be this evolving story that we're just going to have to monitor quite closely.
Is there anything realistically that Bermuda can do to both on to sort of counteract the threats on both sides of the Atlantic?
Yeah, I think...
I mean, it literally is a sandwich, is the filling in the sandwich at the moment, isn't it, Bermuda, unfortunately?
Yeah, I think the you know, the Bermuda government is doing a great job in sort of, through their London office, monitoring the sort of issues that come up from time to time. I think it's important that we're in a state of readiness. But I also think that because of Brexit, there's also been opportunities here for Bermuda as well, as people who are in the UK market want to sort of mitigate against uncertainty. They've looked at Bermuda as possible coming here. So, again, I think this is a scenario that's going to play out over the next 18 months, and with a sort of political issues that May has in the UK.
In 18 months, you might not be leader.
Right. So I think that's the sort of, you know, when we talk about political risks that you face, that's sort of a political risk. Does it change? You know, Brexit has been invoked. The divorce proceedings have started. And I just think it's another one of those issues that we will continue to monitor.
A bit closer to home, I think it was last year, early this year, I can't remember now, again, Mr. Kading was quoted as saying, and sometimes it's easy for political leaders here on the island to forget the world is watching, but actions here do affect Bermuda's global reputation and can influence its international business and tourism sectors to the detriment of the local economy. And that was in the context of political unrest. Can you expand a bit on maybe what he was trying to say?
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget that we're competing on a world stage and we're competing for business. And I think anything that draws negative attention, I think, you know, we live in a sort of instant news age. So a headline that's carried in the Royal Gazette at 8 o'clock will be picked up by international media by noon. So then they take their own spin on that story. And the negative headline very quickly becomes embedded as fact if people read certain things. And our competitors will then use that to exploit us. I think we saw that earlier in the year where post our election there was a story that then ran in the Cayman press.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we have to be mindful that the newspaper, the media, the social outlets, the Twitters, they're not limited to this 20 square mile border. What we say is important because we are being watched, we are being evaluated. Bermuda is currently undergoing an assessment by the EU Code of Conduct, which they do. They're doing it for 92 countries. It's a standard evaluation of countries. We've just gone through an evaluation for OECD and our implementation of how we process information requests. We were found to be largely compliant, which is great. We'll have an assessment next year for anti-money laundering. So these assessments are ongoing external assessments. And so it's kind of like we're having to carry a scorecard or we're constantly being marked. So when you make comments or you make, you know, statements, like I said, they're not captured by the border of Bermuda. They're picked up and then people draw their own conclusions and make their own sort of what did that mean. So I think that's what my boss was trying to get across was we have to be mindful that we're operating in a global theater. We're not just sort of located here.
A few quick topics I want to touch on. It might sound like a strange question, but artificial intelligence, is that a threat in the future? The reason I ask that is I read an article some time ago about an insurance company in Japan who had laid off about 30 people and replaced them with a desktop app.
Right. I don't think so in our market, the artificial intelligence, although I think that you will see an increased use of technology to bring about efficiencies. We're still doing far too much paper and far too much stuff that could be done and done more efficiently and more cost efficient with technology. We see this already in the primary market. Young people don't buy insurance in the US by calling up an agent. Those days are over. They get an app, they go online, They figure out what's the best price point. That's how they purchase. That sort of hasn't evolved to the reinsurance market or the commercial market as such, because there's a lot of complexity around what you're insuring. But I think it also speaks to the customer relationship that you have with the person who's selling you the insurance, and that trust and the understanding of what your business is, what the risks are. So I think artificial intelligence is something that will come into play, but I'm just not sure it will have that impact at the level that it has had at the primary.
Right. I mean, because we talk about managing costs and resources, that presumably is quite tempting.
It is quite tempting. I think, like I said, in the sort of car insurance, motor insurance, even house insurance, I can see where, you know, you go on an app and you put, I've got three bedrooms and this is the square footage and I have a garage and I have, and then you get an instant quote. I can see where that, I think it's a little bit more difficult in the commercial space.
Something called the, go back to my notes, sorry, the Ogden rate.
Yes.
I wanted to touch on this. I came across this a couple of months ago, and as I understand it, it's a change to the UK system, where and a way of working out the amount of compensation paid out, in particular to accident victims.
Yes.
And apparently it could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars to your benefit. Tell me a bit about this and what it's about and how it could impact the industry.
Well, I think it is an interest rate that is discounted from the award. So, for example, if an award is £10 million or whatever, then the judge could then... using an amount of interest, he deducts that from the award, because he says, and if you're going to get X, then part of the compensation has to take into account that if you took that £10 million and you put it in the bank or whatever, you'd get a particular type of interest. I think that's the easiest way I can describe it. So earlier in the year, there was this consultation about reducing that rate, which would cut the discount rate. It was from 2.5% to actually -0.75%, so it actually was going to cost us more. So the claimant amount was going to not be reduced as such. What we know now is it looks as if the Lord Chancellor sort of is backtracking a little bit. He's probably had quite a response from the London market on that rate.
So it's costing more, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they're still examining it, but it's about the discounting rate. And it may be pegged at sort of a Bank of England rate or something like that. I don't think the final determination has been made yet. But, yeah, it could impact, but we don't know yet sort of the level of impact.
Again, there's a lot of stuff up in the air for you guys, isn't there?
Yeah.
If you could predict the industry in 10 years, if you could look into a crystal ball, where would it be? What state would it be in?
Wow. Well, hopefully I'm retired by then, Jeremy. But I think...
Well, looking from your retirement home somewhere, where will the industry be?
I think hopefully it will have evolved to using technology more, like in our conversation. But I think, I always look at insurance as providing protection and peace of mind. So I think we're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to be there for our clients. I think the risks of our clients might change depending on how we evolve over time, and I think that will change. So, for example, you talked about artificial intelligence, but we didn't talk about cybersecurity. So cybersecurity risk is something that a lot of our members are exploring, looking at. Some of them are writing it already. I think the way in which the world operates, you know, it was funny, about 10 years I would have said we were moving towards a borderless society. It seems as though, as in response to that, maybe those borders are coming back up.
More nationalism, yeah.
More nationalism. We saw that with the Brexit vote. We saw that with the Trump vote. So we're seeing a change in sort of a political atmosphere. So I think insurance will always respond to the needs of its clients. So 10 years from now, I don't want to predict what the world looks like, because I would have got it definitely wrong last year, Jeremy.
A lot of us did.
A lot of us, right? So I think what we sort of pride ourselves in is that stable client relationship that is there to provide risk protection, peace of mind. I just think it will change as our clients change and as the business world.
Still be in Bermuda?
Yeah, I think it'll still be here. May take a different shape. but it, I think it will be in Bermuda. If all the sort of building blocks for commercial business are here, I think we'll remain here.
Okay, on that note, thank you very much for your time. It's
all
been
right.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.